question doesn't mean that you need to make presentation or input or comment on the bill. Those, all of the comments must be just inserted in the bill. But we, when reading the responses of the department, some of them how they've agreed with some of the comments. And some were somehow they've said that this comment has been covered in clause 1, 2, 3. So it doesn't mean that when people make the comments, all the comments must also be put into the bill. But I think what the department has done, if there's no need for the comment to be included in the bill, let it be so. If there's a need, we've got legal gurus here. If there's a need for the comment to be reconsidered, let it be so. But it doesn't mean that all the comments that are being made must be just inserted in the bill.
Any further comments? In the absence of further comments, the department, will you please respond?
Thanks, Chair. Just on the department being constructive, Chair, we started, if you remember, that we released the Green Paper on Land Reform in 2011 at the end of the year. And from 2012, we have been engaging with organizations from civil society. And that includes organizations that are part of the group that has submitted the written comments. By and large, this bill is a product of that work, from the policy side up to and until we produce the bill. So we have been honestly, widely consulting, and maybe some of the issues that are outstanding are real issues where we have persuaded one another and we have come to a position where we don't agree. So it's we are not at all dismissive of public comments. We really have taken them very seriously. Even at the time when they came from Parliament to ourselves, we considered them quite seriously. Hence, we have agreed to some of them resulting in certain amendments. I think Thabo will speak to the changes.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. We have a draft A-list, Chair. A-list. And we thought, as we're going through the clause-by-clause reading of the bill, where we are recommending amendments, we will factor those in. So I don't know from a process point of view, if, but we have done it. We've got an A-list with the Chief Office of the Chief Legal Advisor.
What I'm hearing, therefore, is that in terms of the questions raised, the department is of the view that they are not dismissive of the public comments. And to amplify that point, they are saying, hence they have even agreed to certain proposals which were made by those who made public comments. So they didn't just throw everything away, which was going to be a sign of being dismissive, of course, but they are not dismissive in this case. And where they did not agree, I think they gave reasons to justify why they don't agree. and I want to leave the matter at that point. In terms of how we proceed, do you want to say something, ma'am?
No,
in terms of how we proceed now, the department did note all the proposals that were made, and in terms of area where they said they will amend, that will be a process which will be included in the clause by clause debate, because we are then going to say, to look at the clause itself and say, this is the clause as it currently reads, and this is how the department is going to effect the changes and agree on the format of that amendment. And we're going to go through that process. And of course, at the end, we can have a verification process to make sure that indeed all what we have said have been properly captured. But for now, that is the line that I think we are going to pursue for now, because the A list can only come after we have gone through this process, clause by clause ourselves, and inserted those amendments. For now, we haven't done so. So we have to do that. And once we have done so, then we can say, now this is indeed how we want the bill to look like in its amended form.
Chairperson, could you record our objection to the fact that we do not have an amended bill before us? An amended draft of the bill before us. If the department has agreed to certain amendments, we should have an amended draft of the bill before us. Could you report our objection to that?
Well,
Honourable Chairperson, to save time, I don't think there is any problem in recording the objection. Otherwise, as Honourable Mungwenya Madila has said, not everything that has been raised that has to be inserted in the bill. So otherwise, I think I will argue this until the sunset. Just my opinion, but just record the objection and we proceed.
Well, of course, I don't understand the rationale behind the objection, quite frankly. And I just want to say to yourself, honourable members, let us not object for the sake of objecting. The issue is, we had a discussion yesterday. We received reports from the department. We received comments from the department. And what they are saying now is, those will remain comments until such time that we ourselves insert them in the bill. That's as simple as that. So for us to say the department was going to sit alone there and insert amendments and object if they didn't do that, I don't think there's any reasoning in that kind of argument. So we are going to proceed. We are going to insert, we are not going to leave anything outside. We are going to insert all those amendments. We will record the objection for the sake of an objection, but I really think that we must be careful not to try and obstruct the process unnecessarily, even when we see logic in front of us. I'm just making this appeal. Okay, say one letter.
Good morning, honourable members. Good morning, Chair. Chair, just also to clarify my role in the committee with the parliamentary advisor. Yesterday, the department did present their comments to the submissions. Today, you're rightly saying that the committee needs to decide close by close, where it should go into the bowl. And then from there, I will then draft a proposed A list, which I then present back again to the committee. And then, like Honourable Marama said, then it's before you as a proposed list. And once it's agreed to, we change the proposed to agreed A list, and then it moves forward. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. So, can I get, are you still on hold that process?
Yes, my objection reported as a
rule. I don't know if you're going to be there.
Chair, let the objection be recorded. Let's proceed as advised.
So we are proceeding. We will record. We will record the objection. Even if the chair is not clear as to what we objected to, but we record objection. That we're now moving into the meat itself. I will read from the bill up to where it says part two. To provide for the establishment, functions and powers of the Office of the Valuer General, to provide for the appointment and responsibilities of the Valuer General, to provide for the regulation of the valuer or the valuation of property that has been identified for land reform, as well as property that has been identified for acquisition or disposal by a department, and to provide for matters connected therewith. In terms of the preamble, whereas the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996, provides for the protection of property, the expropriation of property of a public, for a public purpose or in the public interest, and subject to just and equitable compensation, and the state taking reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to foster conditions which will facilitate land reform and restitution of land of which a person or community was dispossessed as a result of past discriminatory laws or practices. Whereas the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996, further stipulates that no provisions of Section 25 may impede the state from taking legislative and other measures to achieve land, water, and related reform in order to redress the results of past discrimination. Be it therefore enacted by the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa as follows. Arrangement of sections. Chapter 1, interpretation, objects and applications. 1, definition. 2, object of this act. 3, application of act. Chapter 2, Office of Valuer General. Part 1, establishment, status, functions and powers. 4, establishment of Office of Valuer General. 5, the status. 6, functions and 7, powers. Part 2, Valuer General and Deputy Valuer General. 8, therefore, will be appointment. 9 will be Deputy Valuer General. Number 10 will be responsibilities of Valuer General and Deputy Valuer General. Chapter 3, the cover valuation of property. authorized valuers and assistant valuations by Office of Valuer General, general valuation powers, conduct of authorized valuers, valuation reports, valuation fees. Chapter 4 will deal with financial and other matters, part 1, financial administration. 17 will be funds of Office of Valuer General, 18 will be the audit. Part 2 will deal with miscellaneous. 19 will deal with delegation of powers and duties, 20 regulations, and 21 short title. Madam, Madam.
Chair, just a matter of consistency throughout the document, and this was something that the department agreed to yesterday, that they actually referred to the specific section under Chapter 2 where it says Office of Valuer General, that it should be Office of the Valuer General. We need to do that in the chapter headings and in the index as well, all the way through, just from a consistency perspective.
Point taken.
Chair, just for the purposes of clarity in headings and subheadings, we don't put the or in or a. It comes just clear. That's the style and form, Chair. Just for clarity. That's why we never added in the initial poll. So, but also just to note that the department will clarify here, but Chair did go through the register of sections, and in there just to note that, remember, we're changing the deputy valuer to general, and there's a few things that the department will mention that will be changed in the A-list there about the chief operating officer. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just in part two on page 3, where where the Deputy Valuer General appears will be substituted with Chief Operating Officer, both in the heading and in at Clause 9, as well as in Clause 10.
Thank you, Chair. I didn't get that.
That's a proposal.
So, are you saying, in terms of this part that we have dealt with, wherever the word Deputy Valuer General appears, it must be replaced with the Chief Operations Officer, COO. Madam, Madam?
Chair, just for clarity, does that mean that there will not be an Office of the Deputy Valuer General? And if so, then one of the provisions in Clause 9 as it currently stands, and I understand that we're going to change the role and function of that position, one of the provisions is that the Deputy Valuer General may act for the Valuer General. So if we're going to do away with the position of Deputy Valuer General and have a Chief Operating Officer, the Chief Operating Officer then cannot act for the Valuer General. I just need some clarity on that.
Clarity? Chairperson, the proposal, if you deal with Clause 9, you'll notice that we're doing away with that provision. That we're providing that no longer can act in the place of the Valuer General. It will be entirely at the discretion of the Valuer General in terms of Clause 19 to delegate, if he's not available, to delegate his functions or to appoint somebody to act in his stead if he's not available, and he or she is not available. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are we agreed?
Yeah.
If you want to speak at the back, I may not see you, just indicate. Eh? I may not see you. All right, so we are agreed with the first part. We now move into Chapter 1, Interpretations, Objects, and Applications. Definitions. In this Act, unless the context indicates otherwise, authorized valuer means a registered valuer who has been authorized by the Valuer General in terms of Section 11 to conduct valuations. Department has the meaning assigned to it in Section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act. Land reform includes land redistribution, land restitution, land development, and tenure reform.
Jay, can we deal with each definition individually? I just think it would make a little bit more sense if we did that rather than trying to do a whole lot.
No. Well, I'm going to read everything so that when we deal, we don't have to read anymore. We can just go and just follow the system without me having to read anymore. Market value means the estimated amount for which the property should exchange on the valuation date between a willing buyer and a willing seller in an arm's length transaction after proper marketing and where the parties had reached, acted knowledgeably, prudently, and without compulsion, provided that in determining market value for purposes of this act, prices paid by the state for any acquisition for property must be excluded, provided further than in the event that no other credible data is available, prices paid by the state for any acquisition of property may be considered. Minister means the minister responsible for rural development and land reform. Office of the Valuer General means the office of the Valuer General established by Section 4. Prescribed means the prescribed by regulations in terms of Section 20. Property means A, immovable property registered in the name of a person, and B, any movable property which is contemplated to be acquired together with the other than immovable property. Property Valuer Profession Act means the Property Valuer Profession Act 2000, Act number 47 of 2000. Public Finance Management Act means the Public Finance Management Act 1999, Act number 1 of 1999. Public Service Act means the Public Service Act 1994, Proclamation number 103 of 1994. Registered Valuer means a person registered in terms of the Property Valuer Profession Act as a professional valuer, professional associated valuer, or a specified category as a public sector professional associated valuer. Valuation means the A, process of estimating the value of a specific purpose, for a specific purpose of a particular interest in property at a particular moment in time, taking into account all the features of the property, including the legal framework, and also considering all the underlying economic factors of the market, and B, outcome or result on the process referred to in this paragraph. A, value, for the purpose of Section 12A, means the value of property identified for purposes of land reform, which must reflect an equitable balance between the public interest and the interest of those affected by the acquisition. Having agreed to all the relevant circumstances, including the A, current use of the property, B, history of the acquisition and the use of the property, C, market value of the property, D, extent of different state investment and subsidy in the acquisition and beneficial capital improvement of the property, and E, purpose of the acquisition. And Valuer General means the individual appointed as Valuer General in terms of Section 8 or acting as such. Okay, here we are.
Chairperson, let's start with the definition of land reform. I agree with the submissions wholeheartedly.
Wait, before we go there, let's first check whether in terms of authorized value, are we together?
Yeah, that's no problem with that.
Department? Agreed. Okay, let's go to that before.
Chairperson, I agree with the submissions, and I think it was common cause amongst all the submissions that the definition is overly broad. In particular, the word includes permits a far broader definition than is normally ascribed in legislation. So I think that we should reword that. Land reform means land restitution, land redistribution, etc., etc. A Otherwise, we're saying it can mean just about anything that somebody who wants to say, well, that's a land reform project. We're going to build houses here. That's a land reform project. You know, I'm just saying that we need to actually have a tight definition. That's the first part of my comment. The second is that the comment from the department was that land development has, and I'm just trying to find it in the document, has international, according to the International Association of Surveyors, land development is defined as the building of, I'm talking about page 15 of the department's responses, has a meaning. As the building of new infrastructure, the implementation of construction, planning, change of land use, etc. Firstly, Chairperson, it strikes me that is not land reform. Okay? That's land use management, land planning, etc. Secondly, the International Association of Surveyors has no legal authority in South Africa. Their terminology means nothing here. So if we're going to talk about land development, then we must have a definition for land development. Lastly, Chairperson, I think that in terms of land reform, land restitution and Section 25 of the Constitution, particularly when we start talking about expropriation purposes, which, let's be blunt here, this bill is aimed at identifying property for expropriation purposes, or aimed at valuing property for expropriation purposes. Section 25 of the Constitution specifies that it must be provided in a law of general application. So we believe that at the end of that clause we need to have as provided for in a law of general application, after the word tenure reform. We insert as provided for in a law of general application. Thank you, Chair.
Can I have comment from the Parliament Advisor?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, with respect to the word include, in terms of legal interpretation, include means it's an openness. So the member, honourable member, is correct in that it now says these are some of the categories, but they could be open to further categories. So the section should be amended to read land reform means land redistribution, land restitution, land development, and land tenure reform. With regard to the law of general application, Section 25(1) of the Constitution says no person may be deprived of property except in terms of the law of general application, and no law may permit arbitrary deprivation of property. Chairperson, in my opinion, this bill is not seeking to expropriate land. It is one step before that. So the Constitution is specifically referring to deprivation, and this is more where property is being valued prior to the negotiation with the landowner. Expropriation occurs after that, and that will have to be done in terms of a law of general application. Thank you, Chair.
So in the first instance, you agree with what it means?
Yes, Chairperson.
And secondly, your view is that the bill as it stands is not actually an instrument for expropriation. Because
yes,
expropriation can only come after all the processes have been exhausted. So I think we can leave that as a matter of interpretation by the honourable member. But I think your point is the bill is not actually directly linked to, because there are certain processes that need to be followed before you can actually reach the stage where you can expropriate. And in terms of the last point you raised about the law of general application, I didn't get you quite clearly in terms of what Dr. Milan is saying.
Thank you, Chair.
Because he's proposing that it must be included after tenure reform. So what is your take on that?
Chair, the honourable member was referring to Section 25(1) of the Constitution, which refers to where a person is being deprived of property. This can only be done in terms of the law of general application. So in terms of land reform or land redistribution, in terms of this particular bill, it deals with property valuation only, where the valuer general was, or the office of the valuer general will determine the price or the value of the property in question. The person or the owner of the property will not be deprived of the property. The valuer general obviously has to negotiate with the owner, or if there isn't agreement, then expropriation is the next step in the process. But this bill does not deal with expropriation, so there's no deprivation of property in respect of this particular piece of legislation.
So the proposed amendment on this one does not apply. Thank you.
Yes, and just to follow up on that.
Chair, the bill is aimed at valuing property for expropriation purposes. So if the department wants to validly make use of the valuation for expropriation purposes, it follows that the valuation should then fulfill the requirements of expropriation. It follows that we should have a law of general application.
Can we first, as we proceed, so that we don't have to return to this argument once more, can you clarify, because I think there is some persistence argument that is being forwarded that the bill argues for valuing land for purpose of expropriation. Because I thought it's valuing land for the purpose of determining the value of the land. But I think we have to clarify so that as we proceed, we must be clear as to what is the local standing of this bill in terms of that argument.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to have to take you back to the first page of the bill, where we're talking about the purpose of the bill. And it's very clear to provide for the establishment, functions, and powers of the Office of the Valuer General, to provide for the appointment and responsibilities of the Valuer General, to provide for the regulation of the valuation of property that has been identified for land reform, as well as property that has been identified for acquisition or disposal by the department, and to provide for matters connected therewith. In nowhere in the bill, Chair, do we make reference to expropriation.
No. Please. No. Let's focus on the bill. So we are going to be guided by what this bill is saying, not by what we're thinking, but not by what we imagine. We're just going to be guided. Madam, you are going to behave in the meeting. Please. We are going to be guided by what this bill is saying, not by what we think. We may proceed now.
Very similar issue hasn't been dealt with.
Which is?
The definition of land development.
Yeah. Can we get a definition?
Thank you, Chair. I think what needs to be noted is that the different types of development that are referred to in the definition, Chair, as it relates to the property that has been acquired for the purposes of land reform. I think Minister even yesterday, in his one of his responses, he mentioned that there has been constant criticism that property that has been restored, either for redistribution or restitution purposes, has failed because there has not been development on the property. So this inclusion of land development is to ensure that that property restored in that manner can benefit from land development. So that is essentially that's why we're mentioning this building of new infrastructure, implementation of construction planning, and the change of land use through the planning permission. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, sir. Can I give you a chance? I'll come back to you.
Thanks, Chair. I'm Susi Matang, DDG Land Reform and Administration. Just want to add on the development. If you look at the history of land reform, it talks to the three pillars, which is restitution, redistribution, and tenure. So all the documents of the department currently, they talk to four pillars. The fourth one is now development, hence it's included in the bill.
Hello, madam.
Chair, I have no problem with it being included. My problem is that it is not defined. Nowhere have we defined what land development is. You're actually talking about something, a future activity. Okay? And we haven't defined it. It's not in any legislation do we talk about land development from a land reform perspective. And here we're now throwing it in here. So if you want to include it, I don't have a problem with it being included. I'm saying let's define what it means.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Without being overly legalistic, the normal rules of interpretation will apply here. In this very bill, we have not defined redistribution. We have not defined tenure reform.
Okay,
simply put, the honourable member has no problem with it. Can we move on? Thank you.
I have a problem, Chair.
You just said you didn't have a problem.
Chair, I have a problem with the fact that it's not defined.
Okay, can we have order? I think now the issue of defining it will also apply to other elements because they also not defined it. So we cannot be selective in wanting to define. I think the answer given to say development should be part and parcel of the process. It's for me it makes sense. And to say any other matter can be dealt with in terms of what you call it the law of general application. And it is on that basis that I think the explanation that has been given covers everything. Now we proceed.
Chair, will you record our objection to this matter, please?
As always, yeah, we do that.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Market value?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In terms of the market value, I just actually, we are not satisfied with the explanation because it's too broad. And then it doesn't actually tell us exactly what's going to happen. It might actually give the impression that it can be abused in another way. I would just like an example. When you read there, I will just quote where I think it is relevant. It is said, provided further that in the event that no other credible data is available, prices paid by the state for any acquisition of the property may be considered. According to me, this is very dangerous because it's opening up the can of worms. The usage of price based on state acquired properties for land reform purposes could distort the market value, and it could actually affect the price of that property. So that's where I actually have a problem. So I need actually that to be actually looked at. And then that definition maybe could actually also embrace the international aspect of it, because if we broaden it, it could actually have a very good sense, so that even the owner of the property could also be the property that is put on the market. So I think this one is very important.
Thank you. Honourable, before they respond, you want me?
Chairperson, yesterday it was said that the state is not a willing buyer when it comes to land reform. However, in many instances, the state is a willing buyer. If the state acquires or disposes of the property, for whatever reason, remember that Section 12B says that a department may request evaluation for whatever purposes. And in those cases, the state is a willing buyer or a willing seller of the property. So when you're determining market value, you then have to consider the state as a willing participant in those processes. And if we're going to consider the state as a willing participant, then we have to take the amount that the state has paid for transactions that, in which it is a willing participant into account. I do think that the one suggestion, I think it came from AgriSA, or maybe from the valuers, where we take out the words after the word compulsion, we take out all the stuff off there, and they said, provided that such prices are treated with caution provided that any state transaction should be treated with caution when they are used as a market proxy. In other words, if you're looking at the transaction of the state, then you must be wary that it might be distorted, that it might have been too low. But you can't just throw the baby out with the bathwater. You've got to actually factor that into account. So I do think that, that the wording that we've got here, where we're blanket excluding all state transactions, I think is problematic.
The issue of the market value and the issue that Honorable Malam raised in terms of the willing buyer, the state being the willing participant.
I'm trying to get the gist. We are saying that valuers need to recognize that the state is not a willing buyer in the land reform space. It's compelled by socio-political considerations, it is compelled by legislation to go and buy. And even when you define just the word market, when you define market, you define it as a homogeneous group that has got access to the same amount of information and probably has got the same type of access to funding. As soon as you say that, then government falls outside because government has got access to large funding. It may not be infinite, but still, it is still very large. So we are saying when they consider comparable sales, the valuers, when they consider comparable sales, they therefore cannot consider the prices that have been paid by the state. Precisely because of this reason that they are not normal. The state is not normal. If you determine market value, you must determine it on the basis of normal players in that particular market. I don't know what other example one can make, but I accept that there's an acceptance that there is a need for the state to be treated differently. If you say simply treat it with caution, we're saying, hey, it's not, we're not firm enough if we say treat it with caution, but still consider it, even if there is dozens of other information that you look at. We're saying omit it so that they it does not distort the number that you'll come back with. From what Chair says, actually, that if I understand what he said, is that don't look at the state. He agrees that we don't look at the state. I don't know if I missed that point. So if I understood it properly, then indeed this is what we are proposing.
So on the result, you are supported. But let me say this. You see, I don't want us to go into second discussing one issue. The department provided an answer in terms of why they believe that the state is not a willing buyer. And the issue raised by the Agri SA that the state must be treated with caution, the department is saying no, that is not good enough to say that. Exclude it completely. And the state is actually compelled, as you say, sir, by socio-economic factors to go into this whole arena. It's not actually just a willing buyer. So it seems to me that the explanation has been given. And taking this matter any further may not be helpful to the committee. I'm the chair, sir. I'll give you a chance to speak. We're not in a party or somewhere where everybody can just shout. You raise your hand, I recognize you. Don't just shout at me like that. So I'm therefore saying, I don't want to pull this matter to your vote because I don't want us to end up here in seconds. But if I'm pushed, I will ask that you vote on this matter and pass. Because if I give you an opportunity to speak, you are abusing that chance now. You just jump in when I don't give you an opportunity to speak. And I don't like that. and I don't think I'll ever appreciate it. So the department has given us their response. You have made your comment, they have responded. And you see, Mr. Malem, let me tell you, you don't go to a meeting and want people to say things that you like to hear. It's not going to happen like that. That's why you have a meeting of people. Even I agree with your view, that does not mean that you have to impose your view on them. And even if they agree with you, they can't move forward. It doesn't work like that, sir. Unfortunately, it doesn't. So on this matter, I want to get an indication of those who support the definition of the market value as it stands on this proposal. Yes?
Chairperson, my comment was that with regard to Section 12B, which refers specifically to market value, Section 12B, I have not had a response from the department. They've indicated that the state is not a willing buyer, willing seller, but it refers specifically to market value of any asset acquired or disposed of by the state. Now, how can on the one hand you be a non-willing buyer, but on the other hand, a willing buyer? That's my whole point. And I've never got a response to that. And you're bulldozing this through.
No, you see, Mr. Mellon, I think I'm going to lose temper now. The way you're continuing is so disrespectful, sir. Let me tell you now, we stop here in that behavior. We don't cross the line. Because you're not going to intimidate me. You're not chairing the meeting. I'm chairing the meeting. I've got the responsibility to direct this meeting. Why have you left your behavior, sir? Outside the door. The department, is there anything that you want to say concerning what Mr. Malem has raised now?
Can we just confess our rules?
Okay.
Let him go.
Lauren Tapani.
Sorry, sir, I forgot to raise the voice. I was just not raising the hand. I forgot that you said down there, bring your attention. I've been raising the hand. Let me set certain appeal to you and not to fall in the trap of losing your patience. We have to deal with this fear, we finish it. And we have to realize that this fear you are talking about, you know, yesterday when I was debating the house, I said, you know, that fear is separate the wood from the sheep. So you must have that in mind when you deal with this. This is the same fear. So don't fall in the trap of, you know, being distracted. Certainly, you know, my understanding, I was going to say this, you know, the problem is that we provided that it can be market value for purposes of this act. That is where my understanding, the problem is. And my assumption of the department, or as the part of this bill to add this one, is because government before has paid exorbitant prices in buying the land. So they are saying, therefore, unreasonable, exorbitant amounts that have been paid by government in buying the land. They are now saying that cannot be used now to determine the value, the market value. But if there is no other credible data available, it may be considered. I don't see anything wrong with that. That is my submission.
Thank you, sir. I have taken a sip of water. I'm fine now. Thank you. Honorable Mandela.
Honorable Chair, first let me try and ease you and calm you to some extent, because after all, Madam Zille did tell us that the Honorable Member is new and is not so well versed with the issues of policy. So on his behalf, let me put in an apology, and if we can just take him along slowly but surely, he'll come to being part of the team. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Whilst we're waiting for the department, okay, but I think they're done now. They're Okay. If you are done, the floor is yours.
So when a valuer goes out to do evaluation, he is going to consider a number of factors that you have already listed, and amongst them is market value. The purpose of including this specific definition was so that we, by way of law, insist that they consider market value in a particular way, in the way that is being defined here. So we would like to retain this specific definition here. When it comes to 12B, which Honorable Mailam has spoken about, this is where the Office of the Valuer General will basically take instructions from another government department to go and do a valuation for them. And their instructions may be outside of land reform, obviously would be outside of land reform. Let's assume that they want to procure property for your usual, let's say, township development or whatever it is. We are just trying to find a way with the legal people to make that distinction clear in the bill, and I don't think we can do it right away. Maybe another 5 minutes for them to be able to make that distinction between when they are receiving instructions and when they are dealing with it in the land form space. Maybe during the bill.
So as I understand you, sir, you mean in terms of the definition of market value, you are good to retain the definition as you have outlined here. In terms of 12B, it actually refers to the valuer general doing the work for another department, which might be something outside the issue of the land restitution. Land reform, let me put it that way. So therefore, you will find a proper way of making a distinction between the two as we proceed. Thank you very much. So we will hear from you as we proceed. Honorable Sonia.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, well, I'm still not satisfied with the explanation, and then I think we will oppose this explanation, this, of market value.
We will record your dissatisfaction or your... The Minister? Is there anyone who has got problem with the definition of the Minister? Agreed?
Agreed.
Office of the Valuer General? Agreed?
Agreed.
Prescribed? Agreed? Property? A and B? Honourable Madam?
Chairperson, there was a proposal that was agreed to by the department yesterday about including a definition, where right in or to such property, including an unregistered right protected by an Act of Parliament, be included in that definition. It said a right in or to such property, including an unregistered right protected by an Act of Parliament.
Department?
That is correct, Chair. We're saying in clause A under property, we delete the end at the end, just after person. And then on clause B, after property and the semicolon, we add an end. And then we have clause C, which is a right in or to such property, including an unregistered right recognized and protected by law.
Alright. Agreed? Thank you. Property Valuer Profession Act. Agreed. Public Finance Management Act? Agreed. Public Service Act? Agreed. Registered Valuer? Agreed. Valuation? Madam?
Chairperson, before I talk to the point, let me just apologize for my behavior earlier. I just get frustrated when I'm supposed to be doing the job of a legislator, and I'm not getting the answers I need to that job, so I apologize.
Your apologies accepted by me, sir. Thank you.
Chairperson, just dealing with point A. Valuation means the process of estimating the value for a specific purpose of a particular interest in a property at a particular moment in time. I have no problem with that definition. Where I have a problem is the rest of the paragraph, taking into account all the features of the property, including the legal framework and also considering the underlying economic factors. All of that is actually covered under the definition of value, because value defines the criteria in terms of which a valuation is done, or the process of valuing a property. So the definition of value gives us the criteria that must be considered. The valuation is either the process or the outcome. And we can't then throw criteria into a process or an outcome. The criteria needs to be part of the value definition, if I'm making sense.
Department?
So maybe we need to just read it once again. Valuation means the process of estimating the value of a specific. Let me start again. Valuation means the process of estimating the value for a specific purpose of a particular interest in property at a particular moment in time, taking into account all the features of the property, including the legal framework, and also considering all the underlying factors of the market. I don't think this becomes criteria. It says broadly, you look at the economic factors, broadly you look at the legal framework. Broadly you look at the features. I don't know what is the real actual English word, but criteria supposes to me that you then become very specific as to what in the legal framework, what in the economic factors, what in the features of the property. But broadly, this is how these are the areas that you need to look at as you are doing a evaluation. And like we said, this is an academic, broadly accepted academic definition of evaluation.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, when I tried to look up for a definition of valuation, I couldn't find something similar to what the department has used. The Property Valuers Profession Act simply states that property valuation means the determination of value of immovable property in respect to that act. The problem with having such a detailed definition for valuation is, in my reading, it does add criteria because it says take into consideration the legal framework and underlying economic factors. So when the valuer is making a determination of the value of a property, he also has or she has to consider this. In terms of the bill, there's two types of value that will be determined. In terms of Section 12A, for the purpose of land reform, and in Section 12B, the market value. So both of those values have determined factors that have to be considered. Now, by having a definition of valuation that does not speak to those two categories is going to cause confusion. I mean, it's not really clear to me what these other considerations mean. While I can easily determine what a value is in terms of land reform and what market value is, so I do agree that this definition of valuation creates confusion. Valuation merely means the process of determining value of property in terms of this act, and that would be simple and
there's no confusion as to any other added factors. Thank you, Chairman.
Is the department willing to consider the proposal? Let me hear from you.
Chairman, I don't want to get into arguments with anybody, but my understanding is that value applies generally. So it's a process to be followed, whether it's for a 12A purpose, in other words, for a land reform, or whether it's for the normal transaction. It's the process that must be followed by the vendor. Where the value only applies in 12A, only applies where there is the value must be determined, the value of the property, which is then defined differently. So it's very clear to me that valuation, this is the process that must be followed, whether it's for purposes of 12A or for 12B, it applies generally for purposes of this act. And value only applies for purposes of 12A, where it's for land reform purposes.
Can I just ask you a question? If you say valuation means the process of estimating the value for a specific purpose of a particular interest in property at a particular moment in time, if it's not given that will follow these kind of procedures in any way. So, in other words, by not even mentioning it here, but it's given that we will have to follow this kind of procedures.
Especially given that we go to town with describing value, just after that valuation definition. So, we don't lose the essence of it if we take out the portion that the honourable member and the legal adviser have got an issue with. We don't lose the essence.
Honourable members, do you agree that we end this sentence at taking into account all the features of the property?
Sure, I have no problem with that. I just have one question, and that is the word specific purpose. Do they not limit the scope of the valuation? In other words, you're saying that only for the purposes of whatever. The process of valuation is only for land reform. You're not looking at the value of the property generally speaking, or only for the purposes of agriculture, that's the value of the property. Whereas you might want to do something completely different to what that specific purpose is.
I think firstly, let's agree, I think we have agreed that we will end a sentence there, right?
Yes.
Can the department help me on the issue of the specific purpose?
Thank you, Chair. I think it goes without saying that one just does not wake up one morning and decide to value, just for the sake of value. When you value for a purpose. We're not defining what the purpose is here, but we say that process of getting a value through valuation, that there probably will be a reason behind it. And it is really just to say that that's why we're not defining those specific purposes.
I think it makes sense. That's my view. I think it makes sense. It's actually meaning that when you value a property, when you try to estimate a value, you are doing it for a specific reason. You don't just do it just to go around and value properties. You know, you have a reason, and I think that's the spirit of the sentence, as I understand it. Agreed? Agreed. B.
Can you therefore read for us A before we pass?
A will read thus: valuation means the process of estimating the value for a specific purpose of a particular interest in property at a particular moment in time. Full stop. Okay? Right.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. let's now look at B. Are we agreed with B? Velu?
Yeah.
Agreed. Thank you. E. Velua General, agreed? Oh, sorry, Villa General is not E, it's a standalone. Madam?
So, person, we've missed value?
No, just ask the Villa, of course, we agree.
Oh, no, sorry, Chair.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed that. Okay. There's one issue here that I think that is left out, and I realize that this section has been taken directly from Section 25(3) of the Constitution. However, the submission of the banking association about the security where a mortgage has been extended over a property, I think we need to factor that into whatever value is just and equitable. It's not just and equitable to set a value that is lower than the mortgage extended over a property, because you're then affecting the rights of a third party. My point being that maybe we need to add in an F here, where we talk about having regard to all the relevant circumstances, including various things, and then F, the value of credit extended over the property.
Value of credit extended over property. Okay, can I hear the? There's a proposal to add F, which talks to the submission made by the Association of Banks of in terms of mortgage.
Okay, can I just explain how it will work in practice? How it will happen in practice is that there will be a property, let's say if credit that has been extended on that property is 10 million rand. Then you have a valuer from the Office of the Valuer General doing the evaluation in terms of this, which will at that time be an act, comes back with a value that says 8 million rand. Now, the proposal from the banking association is that you must pay 10 million rand anyway, in the example that I'm making. So if they have extended a 10 million rand loan to that property owner to do whatever it is that he's doing with the amount, we come back and we do evaluation as the Office of the Valuer General at 8 million rand, that the banking association then proposes that you must still pay 10 million rand anyway. And what we are saying, Chair, is that then there is no point. There is absolutely no point. Because at the end of the day, you will have properties that have been bonded all the way through, or that will be bonded even in the future once this becomes an act, which then says, at the end of the day, we will not be able to achieve all these things. We will not be able to, or we will even dilute or take out the impact. You will end up diluting the work that would have been done by you considering things such as current use of the property, the history of acquisition, the market value, the extent of direct state investment and subsidy in the acquisition and beneficial capital improvement of on that particular property. Once you add that recommendation from the banking association, it kills everything else. So at the end of the day, we might as well retain the status quo.
In other words, just to test my own understanding, what it means is the bill seeks to, or let me put it this way, in other words, in that situation, what it basically means in that scenario that's just painted, it means the value of the property was overrated. If the bank mortgaged the value at 10 million and the outcome of the process is understanding of valuation, put it at 8 million. The bank wants you to pay the 10 million as if you haven't done evaluation on the property.
When I explain it, it doesn't mean that the bank would have overestimated it at all. It actually means the bank would have considered probably market value only. Because remember, even when the association made their presentation, they explained, even in the written submission, they explained that they look at market value. Because as they extend credits, they want assurance that they would be able to get it back as a collateral from the market. So they look at market value. Now, this bill says don't look at market value only, because there are other things that the Constitution actually empowers you to look at. And we are saying valuers, when they go and do valuations, let them look at these other things. A person may have gotten property over time. Government may have contributed to that property by direct subsidies and so on. Look at how that property is being used at that time, and all of those factors looked at together may in certain instances, Chairperson, result in a value lower than the market value. It may very well be the case, and in the example that I'm making, it may fall at 8 million rand. Now, the crux of the proposal from the Banking Association is when that does happen, ignore that value, pay market value, which is 10 million. That's why I'm saying we might as well not go on with this endeavor.
Chair, first of all, it's current legislation that the banks have to consider market value in extending credit over properties. That's the first factor. The second is that we would be depriving banks of security if we don't consider that factor. The third is that in terms of the way this definition is worded, and it again comes from the Constitution, it says, having regard to all the relevant circumstances, including, and then it lists them, and I'm saying, include the cost of credit as a circumstance that you have to consider. You don't have to set the value at the market value. I'm just saying that factor that into the calculation. Because otherwise you are depriving the banks of a right. They have a right over that property. We're depriving them of a right. And we need to factor that into our consideration.
Yeah, with the explanation, I'm now starting to question so many things. Because when you acquire a land, you go to a bank, you make a bond. There is an agreement that you reach. There is a bond to be paid by 10 years or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got an amount of money that is attached to the agreement. Now, after passing this act, it's saying that this bill to be an act, it's saying that when valuation is done to buy that particular property, then it might be actually the amount of money might actually be decreased from, let me just use the 10 million that they used to 8 million. So then what happened to the agreement between that particular individual and the bank? Who's going to pay the difference? So that's where I actually want to understand the rationale behind this. And I'm starting to wonder if this is going to work. Thank you.
Can I just make just one or two general comments? You know, it seems to me when in 1996 we adopted the Constitution and we declared that it is a supreme law of the land. In other words, anything that we do must be guided by it. We may not quite clearly understood the implication of what we are adopting. And if my understanding is correct, the same argument can and will be advanced in terms of the whole question of the restitution. To say, but why do we want to, why do we want people to apply for land which is already in the hands of others who can argue that they also got it property? But the fact is, as an historical fact, that land has been taken away from others. So I'm making this point to say, in a transformation process like this, there are certain factors, no matter how bitter we may feel about it's like really praying every day, you know, wanting to go to heaven but not wanting to die. Because to go there, you have to die. There's no way, there's no other route. So I'm just making this as a general observation to say that there are certain things that no matter how hard they come toward us, we really have to face the blow, you know, and saying, as transformation, you know, caters, as transformation practitioners on those sides, we have to take some of these things to move forward. I thought I must make that general comment, but I want you to, comment from what has been raised so far.
Yeah, because she's going to give a more concise legal opinion. But there's an issue of also managing the distortion of the prices of the properties here in question. If you refer to an example of the difference between 8 million and 10 million, the issue here is that someone should be able to pick up to say that, but Mr. X is buying a property at an inflated price, and as a result or consequence, properties in that particular area are going to be distorted. The information or the price is going to be distorted. So you need someone to come and say, but you cannot buy this property at this price. There's an example of saying that X might be related to Y, and they can enter into an agreement in terms of the price, ignoring the rules of the game, because someone wants to generate income or interest, but they've agreed, it's a gentleman's understanding. So most of the time, those gentlemen understanding come into the picture when the legal transaction had to be enforced, because already X has sold a property at a higher value to Y. You see, so those are the things that we want to contain with the introduction of this office, that they can expand.
Thank you, Chair. I think regard needs to be had at all times, that the value that is going to be determined by the valuer general is not compulsory on the property owner. They can reject it. We will come with a value and say we want to buy the property at 8 million. He can reject it. What then will happen is that should that be the decision, we will then expropriate the property. And when we expropriate, we're going to use those factors in the Constitution that do not have cost of credit anyway. But the issue is that it's not compulsory for the property owner to accept it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you then are saying that value is being determined for the purposes of expropriation. You've just said it. I'm sorry, you've just said that.
Well, I think we have dealt with this matter. And the way we have dealt with it, we have said there are other processes. You know, we cannot ignore the fact that at some point, expropriation will come. But the fact of the matter is, there are going to be processes that are going to be followed. That one will be the last resort in case there's no agreement. And I want us to understand expropriation within that context. We must not ignore anything else and say, yeah, thank you very much. If you get it, I'm satisfied. But I want us to move now. Please. So we are going to proceed.
Sorry, checking your notes are concerned. It's not...
Go ahead.
I don't want to actually raise it as an objection. This is a concern that the cost of credit is not being considered, adequately considered.
Can you note it? Okay, note it. Villa General is fine, right? Objects of this act. Okay, in terms of object of this act, 2 up to E, do you agree? 2A up to E, agreed? In terms of application of the act, agreed? Agreed. Let's go to chapter 3. Part 1, establishment, status, functions and powers. The office of the Villa General is hereby established. Agreed? Status 5A up to C. Agreed? Agreed. Functions. Okay.
Just 5C. The office of the Valuer General is accountable to the minister. Should the office of the Valuer General not be accountable to the Director General of the department?
So here we remember we have had those discussions about independence, not in the traditional sense, but just the decision making was a process. So we wanted to retain the department, which is pursuing a land reform mandate, separate from the office of the Valuer General, but still accountable to the same political authority. So that was the basis really of saying accountable to the minister and not to the director general.
Madam?
Chair, it's just that there's no provision in this act to make the Valuer General the accounting officer or any financial or fiduciary responsibility, whereas the Director General of a department has specific fiduciary responsibilities from a financial perspective.
Just as a first of all, I'd just like to say that what is being raised at the moment will be addressed in our proposed amendment to Clause 9. We'll be dealing with the functions of the Valuer General and the establishment of the Chief Operating Officer. But this is, let me warn them out, this is a separate legal entity that's been created. And in normal circumstances, those entities are accountable to the minister, to the political head of the department, and not to the administrative head of the department.
Okay, can you take it then? Functions 6A up to D.
Just a kind of I suppose it goes back to the definitions. Value has one meaning. Valuation is a process. I'm just a little bit, you know, they must value. Must conduct a valuation on. I'm not sure if that's maybe better style.
Just about population or style of writing.
My understanding is in order to arrive at a value, you must go through a process, and that process is valuation. You can't arrive at a value without value, going through the process of valuation. That's what we say.
Maybe just the word value is used as a verb.
Yeah, that's right. What is the verb? The
Greek word. Sorry, but isn't it? Remember, this is limited to clause 12A that deals with default. So, value has a very specific meaning for purposes of this act, of this bill, at the moment. Very, very specific meaning.
Okay, I think we're together. We agreed, six agreed, and 6A agreed. Powers.
Small technical amendments in the heading, or it says office of value general, just office of the value general, putting in there. And you'll notice that paragraph E should be D. So we're just correcting that.
Yeah, should be D. Thank you very much. It's A, B, C, and then D, not E. Thank you very much. Okay, 7, powers, A, C,
Chair, clause 7C is way too broad. It gives the Office of the Valuer General extensive power to act. It undermines the constitutional principle of the rule of law. There should be a law of general application that grants an administrator the authority to make any particular decision.
Let me try to understand. Can you repeat what you said?
I said that section 7C is overly broad. It gives the Office of the Valuer General extensive powers to act, and it undermines the constitutional principle of the rule of law. There must be a law of general application that gives an administrator the authority to act.
Department?
Sorry, I'd just like to draw the committee's attention to the wording of the clause. It says very clearly, basically goes about the efficient and effective valuation of property, very important, that has been identified for land reform. So it's not a broad, it's very limited, the authority that's given to you. Limited to only that land has been identified for land reform.
It is specific indeed. Agreed? Part 2, Appointment of Valuer General and Deputy Valuer General. By the way, here we spoke about COO, right? 8. 8.1. Agreed? Mm-hmm. Sir, madam?
Chairperson, in 5B, we talk about the impartiality of the Office of the Valuer General. It must exercise its powers and functions and perform the functions of the office without fear, favor, or prejudice. It is our belief that the appointment process should be done through this committee and approved by Parliament.
Appointment of the Valuer General.
The appointment of the Valuer General must be done through this committee and approved by Parliament.
And account in a minute.
Take an account in a minute, Chairperson. Sorry.
Okay, can I get a department to respond on that? You say appointed by this committee?
Chairperson, the appointment itself is done by the Minister. Upon recommendation from this committee to the National Assembly, who would then ratify it. Similar to the processes that other impartial bodies go through. And the appointment of the office of the
Chapter 9.
No, well, not necessarily the Chapter 9, there are others. The SABC board. The SABC board, for example.
All right. But on the plan?
Chairperson, my understanding of the procedure my colleague refers to is Chapter 9 institution. And this is not a Chapter 9 institution. And they are appointed through the recommendation of the committee and accountable to Parliament. So there is a difference between these two.
Department?
The functioning of this office. It's kind of providing services to government. To do evaluation services for the department. I say, if you look at the whole aim of this bill, it's to provide a evaluation service to government. It doesn't provide a evaluation service to the public. It deals only with evaluation service to the public for land reform purposes and then to departments for the normal everyday, day-to-day transfers. It's unclear why we should go through the long, the cumbersome process of doing the appointment.
So, okay.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chairperson, while there are many entities and the Chapter 9 institutions that go through a parliamentary process, as my colleague said, you have to look at the function of the entity. Is it interacting with the public? Is there a need for independence in terms of the public eye? And further, the fact that the minister appoints does not necessarily mean that the person is now not going to act impartially or act impartially. There is protections within the Act that says that the office must be impartial and must exercise its powers and perform its functions without fear, favor, and prejudice. So when they're actually doing the valuation, they need to adhere to this clause. With regard to having a parliamentary process, this is the person who has to be appointed has to be a registered valuator. And I'm not sure whether the members will be able to evaluate whether that particular person meets the criteria or it's something that should be left to the discretion of the minister through a process that will find someone who is suitable. Thank you, Chairperson.
So, colleagues, it is clear that this particular individual does not account for the public. So, it cannot be treated as like a Chapter 9 or any other institution that accounts for the public. So, the appointment must be like an appointment of any other internal appointment in the department.
Okay.
Chairperson, the Constitution obliges Parliament to oversee the role of the executive. That's one of the functions of Parliament. And all we're asking for here is that this position, not the entire organization, just the valuer general, the appointment of the valuer general himself or herself, be done through a parliamentary process. The reason for that is because you say that this has no interaction with the public. Well, unfortunately it does. It affects the rights of the public. It affects the rights of private individuals when you say to them, your property is going to be valued. They want to be assured that their property is going to be valued fairly and impartially. And one of the ways we can do that is by putting it through a parliamentary process. Now, we're not saying an extended process, we're not saying it goes through a committee and it gets a recommendation to Parliament. We saw last month, how quickly the SADC board got appointed through Parliament. I don't understand why there would be an objection to this. It's not like we're asking for, I don't know, but the bottom line is that it's a reasonable request from an impartiality perspective to ensure that the rights of all South Africans are protected.
Yes, thank you very much. If I may just add on what my colleague Kevin has just indicated, there is also ICASA that is also taking the same process, because that is to ensure that there is impartiality. And there was also a submission from the banking when they were saying that they actually want requested that office of the Law General to be located in the public works. It shows that people don't think that if this the office is under land reform, it will be impartial. So there is this move that people are actually feeling that there must be something that is done to show, to confirm the status of that office to be impartial. Thank you.
Can I get anyone from the members who agree with the views expressed by Honorable Mylem and Honorable who agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
I think I've had the department, now it's for the committee now to express their views. There is no support for that, unfortunately. So it is committee, it stands as it is.
Objection.
So, Madam.
Checking your court objection.
Yes.
We will. 2A2. Agreed? Agreed. We go to now page 6. Deputy Valuer General. It's your.
Sorry, clause 8. In the event of a vacancy in the office of the Valuer General, how long or what steps would be taken to fill that role? We've now done away with the office of the Deputy Valuer General, and we're going to talk to that in the next clause. My point is, there's a vacancy. At some point it has to be filled. There has to be something for the interim.
Are you able to talk to that?
I think this is where the AU Valuer General has left, right? They still live when they die.
What about
this? Left in the S. Well, we take it that there will be a structure in the office of the Valuer General, and that structure will be made up of valuers on the technical side and non-valuers on the support side, depending on the support function that they fulfill. And as a result, the Valuer General will then, the minister will be able to appoint a person as an acting Valuer General who fits this bill that has already been described in the Act. So one of them who is a registered Valuer, who is all these things that have been described in 8, will then be appointed by the minister as an acting Valuer General, while the recruitment process is ongoing.
Chairperson, can I suggest that a clause 8.3 be inserted that says that in the event of a vacancy in the office of the Valuer General, an acting Valuer General may be appointed from, or something along the lines of who meets the criteria in section 8.2 for a period of no longer than 6 months. I don't know, 6 months? It's just so that you have a framework within which to operate, so that you don't have that vacancy at the top there automatically.
Any comment?
Chair, we're not uncomfortable with the recommendation except where it prescribes the period, because you may go through the process of recruitment, and just upon appointment something else happens to the candidate. So if we're going to confine ourselves in that manner, we're legislating something that we will shoot ourselves in the foot. Yes, we acknowledge that the speed to fill vacancies is appreciated everywhere. So we want to leave it to the discretion of the minister. Okay. There will be an acting person and a recruitment process will follow. But to try and pin it down to 6 months would be unreasonable.
But would you be agreeable to an additional clause that says, in the case of a vacancy in the office of the Valuer General, and then, yes, sir.
So if we use the words in a vacancy in the office of the Valuer General, doesn't it mean all other vacancies? Shouldn't we say if the position of Valuer General is vacant?
I think that's the essence of the proposal. Yeah. Okay, that's fine. Agreed. Then let's go to nine.
Thank you, Chair. We're proposing the substitution of the current clause 9 with the following. Chief Operating Officer to substitute Deputy Director General. Clause 9.1 to read, the Minister must, subject to the provisions of the Public Service Act, appoint a Chief Operating Officer. Clause 2, the person appointed as Chief Operating Officer must be a South African citizen and have sufficient experience and knowledge relating to A, public administration, B, public finance, or C, legal and constitutional matters affecting public administration. Subclause 3, the Chief Operating Officer is responsible for A, the organization, control, management, effective utilization and training of all staff. Subclause B, maintenance of discipline, and C, the performance of such powers and duties delegated to him or her in terms of Section 19.
Agreed?
Chair, I don't have a problem with that in principle, but I would have liked to have seen it in writing before we...
Are you reading what is written there?
Mm-mm. Correct, Chair.
Can you take it away for
me? Chair, I have no problem taking it away.
Thank you very much, Chair. It's going to come when we finalize the A list. It's going to come. Thank you. So let's look at 10. But anyway, in this bill where the Deputy Director General appear should be the CEO, right? Mm-hmm. You call it Mutatis Mutandis, mm-hmm. Is it? Okay, no, that's good. So let's look at 10.
Chairperson, what we're proposing is a consequential amendment to clause 10 due to the...
So just because you continue, just before you continue, I've just got a request to pose a question as to whether the COO, can this person be able to do the work of a valuer?
No, Chair. This person is going to be responsible for the administration and the day-to-day running of the office.
As you have indicated.
As you have indicated, yes.
Okay, then we proceed to 10.
Proposing consequential amendments due to the replacement of Deputy Valiant General with Chief Operating Officer. And then in clause 10.1d, where it says he's the Chief Executive Officer, and we're including there and the accounting authority of the office. Same for the introduction sentence to clause 2 as the Chief Executive Officer.
So, just taking back to D.
He's the Chief Executive Officer and the Accounting Authority. And the same in the introductory words to subclause 2 as the Chief Executive Officer and the Accounting Authority. That's his responsibilities. Then we're including after paragraph D of subclause 2. Clause 4, A, B, and C. We're deleting clause 4, and the paragraph A, B, and C is included in the responsibilities of the Valiant General.
Clause 4, sorry, say that again?
Clause 4 has been deleted. However, paragraphs A, B, and C are included now under subs. Clause 2 as the responsibilities of the Valiant General.
Are we following? Good. Are we in agreement? Thank you very much. Then we go to chapter 3, 11. One, two, three, four. Agreed? Okay, department.
Chairperson, just in sub-clause 11.3, we agree to include the person to assist must also be issued or provided with identity card. So we're just amending it to provide that the authorized value as well as the person contemplated in 2B must be issued with identity card, as proposed.
Okay. Honourable Manor?
11.2B is clumsy, and I think it needs to be redrafted. I don't have a problem with what they're trying to say there. I get what they're trying to say, but I think it just needs to be redrafted.
That's 2B.
Yeah.
To assist in the conduct of evaluation may be a person with non-valuation qualifications, experience and competence, to the extent that a person with such qualifications, experience and competence is necessary for assisting with any valuation. Can you unpack it for us? Or do you agree with it?
No, Chair. It legally is just in fact, I really don't have a problem understanding what the provision is. Maybe, Chair, if the Honourable Member can propose, because we have looked at it again, and maybe we're married to our ways.
We are married to our ways of writing.
I understand where Honourable Maylam is coming from. You know, if this sub-clause says this person does not need to have qualifications, but down, further down, it says with such qualifications, it appears to be a contradiction.
Let's try and read it again. Eh? I want to start reading it from top. When you say 2A, a person authorized in terms of subsection 1 to assist in the conduct of evaluation may be a person with non-valuation qualifications. Experience and competence, to the extent that a person with such qualifications, experience is necessary for assisting. No, I think you have to explain to us what you mean.
It says, can I read that again and just stop where I need to explain? A person authorized in terms of subsection 1 to assist in the conduct of evaluation may be a person with non-valuation qualifications, experience and competence, to the extent that a person with such qualifications, meaning such qualifications, those that are non-valuation qualifications, experience and competence is necessary for assisting with an evaluation.
Okay.
So the such qualifications refer back to the non-graduation qualifications, like the engineering example that I made yesterday for Endo.
Okay, let's hear you.
So I think a really simple way of dealing with this is where it starts, to the extent that such a person, and then delete everything up to is necessary for assisting with any evaluation. It just makes it a little bit more understandable.
To the extent that?
So it would read as follows. A person authorized in terms of subsection 1 to assist in the conduct of evaluation may be a person with non-valuation qualifications, experience, and competence, to the extent that such a person is necessary or assisting in any valuation.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Agreed?
Agreed, sir.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're done. Okay, now we deal with 12.
I'm sorry, Chair, before we go to 12.
Okay. Chair, one of the things that I don't quite know where it goes in. Okay, let's deal with 12. All right. 12, valuation of office of Villa General. Whenever a property has been identified for a purpose of land reform, that property must be valued by the Office of the Valuer General for purpose of determining the value of the property having regard to the prescribed criteria, procedure, and guidelines, or acquisition or disposal by a department for any reason other than that mentioned in paragraph A. The market value of such property may, at the request of the department, be determined by the Office of the Valuer General. Agreed.
Chair, just there's a comma that's floating there under after whenever. That shouldn't be there. Chair, I'd like to make a proposal. That be sub clause one of section 12, and that we insert a new section, a new clause two that reads as follows: whenever a property has been identified for valuation, a notice of intention to conduct the valuation shall be provided in writing to the title holder 30 days prior to any of the actions referred to in section 13. Now this is slightly different from the notice in writing that they want to inspect the property, which is there's a 72-hour provision that's given here. What this is saying is we as the department want to come and conduct the valuation. Get your ducks in a row. Get the paperwork you need, get everything ready 30 days prior to any of the steps that are taken here. It's a notice of an intention to conduct the valuation, not the notice to come and inspect the property.
Effect amendments to clause 13, which is more specifically clause 13.3, which deals with the issue that has just been raised by the honourable member, and we're proposing fairly extensive amendments to 13.3 for prior permission from the owner before the property may be entered or inspected, failing which a court order must be obtained. My view is that should deal with it, because if you get tired a notice of the actual valuation, must agree to it before the actual valuation can be conducted.
Okay.
Chair, there is no requirement that the Valuer General actually inspect a property. There's no requirement that the valuation that there be a physical inspection of the property. Do you understand what I'm saying? So, if there's no requirement, the valuation could happen as a completely desk exercise, and the title holder would have no knowledge that his property was being valued. So what I'm saying is that there must be a notice of an intention to value a property. So that we're being open and transparent. Tell them that, hey, we've identified your property as something that is being considered. We want to conduct a valuation. I don't think that's unreasonable. Yes,
sir. Let's just create scenarios here. If it's restitution, there's a claim, there will be a gazette. What
which is the public notification that the land is under claim. Then if it's a normal redistribution, in most instances there will be a communique whereby the seller is offering the land for redistribution. In both instances, once that there will be a valuation, we under normal circumstances discourage desktop exercise, because sometimes you find that the land is not in that particular condition as in the research or desktop exercise that the valuers are doing. So there will be that physical inspection, but the essence is that the seller will know of the process of the evaluation in time, especially if it's residential, because it will have been gazetted. So we'll expect that someone will come and value your land.
Of course, but I think if I understand you, but if I read three, it seems to me it takes into account, because there is no way that they can enter the property without the knowledge of the owner. Okay, let's hear
it. Chair, I'm not talking about entering the property. I'm saying that it is possible to conduct a valuation without entering a property. It is possible to conduct a desktop valuation, and it has happened, and I know of many, many, many cases in terms of land restitution where it has happened, where the valuers have not entered the property. They said, this is the going rate for agricultural land in this area, that's what the value is going to be set at. Many cases, Chair, but we heard about it in the public hearings. My point is that if that occurs, and I take what the DEG is saying, that there would be a notice in terms of restitution, there would be a notice in terms of some of the other, not all of these things require that a notice be given. So what I'm doing is just saying that where the Office of the Valuer General is now going to conduct a valuation on a property, the titleholder be informed. I don't know why that should be a big issue. Can I get a reason why the department is opposed to that?
We don't have a problem, but 30 days, does it mean that we will not be able to come through before 30 days is over? I'm just looking at turnaround times that runners must be able to do their work and finish that quickly. The other thing that we must remember, at this point, Chair, the relations are still very cordial between the property owner. They are not adversaries yet, or they may even never be. So the relations are still very cordial. So I would say, yes, we're not averse, but a shorter period.
What do you suggest, sir? 7 days. Agreed? Agreed? Agreed. Okay, thank you. By the way, is that 12C? Or what are, we have 1 and 2 now. Okay, good. 13. Do you mind if I don't read it? You don't mind. So that tomorrow I'm not the accuser, we can jump to one step. We are agreeing that I don't read now. We're having it here. Okay, thank you very much. Yes, sir. Chair, just 13.1c require the owner, tenant, or occupier of the property or the agent of the owner to provide the authorized valuer either orally or in writing with particulars regarding the property which the authorized valuer reasonably requires for valuing the property. We agreed, I think, with the department that would be subject to any limitations imposed by PIA. Recalling that PIA said that you may not be obliged to give out information which may disadvantage you. So I'm just saying that we need to recognize that there's other legislation here that affects that.
Department.
this legislation is applicable to fire anyway. It's normally not expressed in the bill to do that. Any limitations that apply by in fire, if this action is taken in terms of deed that is in conflict with my fire, it will be illegal. That's without saying. And my colleague is taking advice of the reason.
Because fire, obviously, you actually talk about the protection of is that the protection? Sorry, I'm thinking about this other one. The promotion. So I take it that the explanation is covered.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out that in terms of consistency, we included in the Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Bill
the register,
the fire definition.
We can include it, we lose nothing, isn't it?
I'm sorry.
So what do you think? I want to hear you.
Okay. I don't know if members can remember in that committee, I also said it wasn't really necessary, but due to assistance from the committee, we put it in. But it's really not necessary. But we can if the committee so wants.
We must also remember that we must try as much as we can to go green and just use as many papers as we can. If we add more weight, we're going to add more papers. Okay, I think we agree on 13. Thank you. Okay.
In yesterday's responses, we also recommended that section 1 reads as follows: when performing evaluation contemplated in section 12, an authorized valuer, and then the dash A, and then we add may at the beginning of A, B, C, D, and E, and keep F with must. That may cascade down to A up to E, and then F remains a must.
So simply put,
yeah.
May make extra, may require, may direct, and then must remain on F. Agree.
There was an amendment to 13.3.
Thank you, Chair. We are substituting the whole of clause 3 as currently in the draft bill with the following provision: an authorized valuer may not enter property contemplated in subsection 2 dash A unless the owner or occupier of such property or such building has consented thereto in writing after being informed, or B, in the event of such owner or occupier refusing or failing to grant consent contemplated in paragraphs A, the valuer is in possession of a court order authorizing such valuer to enter such property, including any building thereon, for purposes of conducting a valuation. And that is it, Chair.
Fairly reasonable. Agreed? Thank you. 14? Agreed? 15? Normal.
Chairperson, 15.1. I'd like to amend that to read: a registered valuer must, comma, within 6 months of the notice referred to in section 12.2, comma, prepare a valuation report. In other words, we're saying that a valuation has a time limitation, otherwise it becomes invalid. Property values change over time. And so a 6-month window is probably about the longest you can expect a valuation to be valid for. So we're saying, from the time that notice is given, you have got 6 months to finish your valuation report.
Okay, Honorable Benyamavida.
But Chair, this is a bill, and regulations will follow. If we want to put everything in the bill, while the minister will, after the passing of the bill, draft the regulations on the processes that are supposed to be followed, I think we'll be making a mistake. because we can't put everything here, but regulations will clarify some of the things, how are they going to be done.
And maybe before the department responds, let me just also say, I'm sure in each and every process, there might be unforeseen challenges that you may face. So if in this instance there are, I would like to know if, for example, let's assume the proposal is considered to take, what happened then after the lapse of the 6 months? Does this mean the whole exercise is doomed, is dead?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think the regulations will pronounce proper, because you've got different kinds of properties. You've got vacant land that can be done in a week. You've got what we call going concern, like buying big agricultural enterprises, that the value appointed may need to go and appoint agricultural economists, other people, transaction advisors, which may take longer than just valuing a vacant land. So those things will be spelled out exactly. But the period of 6 months, I think it's reasonable. But then doesn't necessarily mean that negotiations should be done up until 6 months. But anything can happen between first day and then 6 months, depending on the property.
I think just to accommodate Honourable Milam, we can say a registered valuer must within a reasonable period in respect of each valuation referred to in section 12 prepare valuation report. We are alive to the various factors that play themselves out. The valuation report is going to be an internal document anyway. It's the basis upon which you're going to make an offer. So we would expect that we will get them a lot quicker than 6 months anyway. But we as the DDG has said, each valuation is going to have to be treated in its according to its own circumstances.
So you're talking about a reasonable period.
Chair, I can live with that so long as we define what is a reasonable period in the regulation. So long as no. And it might have that we have categories that have vacant land 1 month, going concern 9 months, whatever it is. So long as that is then catered for, I don't have a problem with that. Chair, I think it's not great. It's not a great solution. As I said, the very definition right at the front, the process of the valuation means the process of estimating the value for a specific purpose of a particular interest in a property at a particular moment in time. So it's saying right now the value is X. In 2 weeks' time, the value might not be X anymore. So a valuation report has a lifespan. And the longer we take to do these valuations, the more invalid they become. And so really what we're trying to do here is, I don't want to say force, but it is to a certain extent forcing the Office of the Valuer General to conduct its work speedily. If it identifies something as being worthy of evaluation, it must be done and completed within a specified time frame. So I don't have too much of an issue there. I do take a little bit of concern to the suggestion that this is a purely internal document. If you want to conduct a valuation on my property, surely I have a right to know what is in that report. I don't quite understand why it would be a purely internal document.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, even though my name is Fred Milam says he has got no problem with it, I think I do have it. If we say reasonable, what is it to me might not be reasonable to you, and I believe 6 months is not unreasonable. Because after 6 months indeed, this value might be affected. So I think if we say 6 months, That is not unreasonable.
Will it be difficult? Will it be difficult if you want 6 months to be added in the bill? Or we want the bill to talk about reasonableness as prescribed by the regulations.
Yeah, I would prefer to see 6 months in the bill. I would prefer that.
Because at some point we must also help the process in such a way that we must understand that you are in a process where you may be in a situation where, for example, the landowner, for example, is not willing to cooperate and can delay the process deliberately up to the end of 6 months. And I'm just thinking aloud, I'm just saying whatever we agree upon must be able to protect both the interest of the landowner and the interest of the one who seek to acquire the land. Yeah, you'll follow.
Your point, Chair, is that the landowner may impede, but there are under 13.1 various things that the Office of the Valuer General may require, may direct, etc., etc. So when a person doesn't comply with that, surely that would then become an offence or a misconduct. I'm not sure. No, probably an offence is the right word. I don't know.
I'm just making this comment, so when they respond, they must take into account. I'm not actually saying anything. What about the ban?
That person, that is a real cause that has to take into account. But I will suggest that, because I still believe 6 months is not unreasonable. And then if we see within 6 months, unless a good cause is shown.
6 months? Unless a good cause is shown. The department, help us.
Chairperson, what I want to say is that it's not problematic if you have a fixed term. The reason being, if you look at the letter of question 3, a owner might refuse a valuer entry onto his property without a court order. And that might be a lengthy process. So in other words, you can't. We've given notice in 12-2, we've identified this property. Now we say we want to come and value the property. The owner says no, you can't enter the property. That period is not controllable through the value, that process, to get all that. So it might be problematic to have a fixed period.
Is that not a good cause? Possibly, yes. Okay, you wanted to say something, sir? Let me say something. We are at a stage where we are saying for a period of 6 months, unless good cause is shown. You help me now. It's only you who agree with me. I want to hear others. Humanibo. Okay, thank you. So the department, you are okay with that, right? Yes, thank you very much. So, Mr. Mellon?
Then on 15.2, I'd like at the end of the paragraph there to put in a comma after determined, including the methodology utilized in determining the valuation. The reason for that is there are various ways of coming to a value, and so it's helpful, should this matter ever be contested or disputed or end up in court, it's helpful in the valuation report to unpack exactly what methodology was utilized. Again, I don't know why.
Collection method is the essence. It's the essence of the report. It's there. So we can list it. We can put in the comma and... Because if you don't have it ready, you don't have evaluation report. It's implied. We want to print more paper. So we will put the comma. All right. 16. Agreed. Let's go to chapter 4 now. 17. Agreed? Okay. 18. Agreed? Good. 19.
Just the COO or deputy valuer general throughout there. But there was a concern about 19.3. And we had some responses from the department. I think at this point we can live with 19.3 given that the, where was it, 19.4, the last line must stay in, which the one proposal said must stay in, the other one said it should come out. That has to stay in.
Which one specifically?
19.4, subject to any rights that may have accrued to a person as a result of the decision. That has to stay in.
Which one?
19.4, the very last line.
Subject to any rights that may be, that may have accrued.
Yes, Chair.
What about it?
There was one submission that said it should stay in, and there was another one that said it should come out. And it is our belief that this should absolutely stay in, because otherwise the whole, you can revoke a decision and there's no consequences for the Office of the Valuer General, but there may be consequences for the other person who's affected by it. So if a right is accrued as a result of a decision of a subordinate, it must be protected.
Department? Agreed? Agreed. 20? Agreed?
20. Wasn't there a recommendation? Oh no, that wasn't the regulation. That was the directive. 11.4. Yeah, 11.4 was the directive. Okay. No, that's fine, Chairperson. Should those regulations not be approved by this committee? The regulations in terms of Section 20, should they not be approved by this committee?
Department?
Chair, I'm not sure there's a part, but I know that in terms of the Interpretation Act, requires all regulations to be tabled in part. For notification, not for approval. For notifications.
By your notices, sir. Thank you. Short title. This act is called the Property Valuation Act 2013 and comes into operation on the day fixed by the presidential, by the president by proclamation in the Gazette. Agreed? So, we will give the department the opportunity to effect the amendments. Yes, sir.
Sorry, Chair. Can I just, it's an oversight. 21. Something that comes into operation that 6 by the President by proclamation, and he said, would there be any objection if we propose that it comes into operation on the date of publication in the Gazette? In other words, on approval by the President, it's published in the Gazette, then it automatically comes into operation.
It does not need a caucus. So, Adrosate, you agree?
I
actually need to better explanation. I don't understand it. Okay, can you simplify it, sir?
Yes, but what happens now is published in the Gazette, it doesn't come into operation. It's not an act of Parliament, but it hasn't had a legal effect. So what has to happen? A long administrative process has to be in the to get the President to approve a separate publication that actually places the act into operation. So it's two different processes. The amendment is agreed to, it's just a single process. The date of approval by the publication exists and it automatically comes into operation. That's the only difference. It's no underhanded.
I need to understand. Is the department saying that this bill must not go through Parliament or just be approved after we make some changes?
No, the short title says this act is called blah 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 and comes into operation on the day fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. Now, you are complicating my life now. You have to take me out of this.
Jefferson, we withdraw the proposal.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's as is. Do you understand the way it is now? Yeah, the issue is, yeah, you're right. Once the President assents to it and proclaims the Gazette, it becomes effective. Now, we are done with the bill, with the amendments, clause by clause. Now, what we're going to do, we'll give the department an opportunity to do what they call the A-list. Don't mistake it for a hit squad or something. It's just a list. And once they've done so, we will meet tomorrow morning. We'll meet tomorrow morning before the caucuses for an hour just to verify and adopt the bill. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'd like to report my strongest objection to that. I heard from behind me there whistle without you. My point is that we have a right to take this to caucus and to consider it in caucus and to adopt before we've had that opportunity with all the amendments that have been made is unreasonable. So I want to place on record that we object strongly to that position, Chair.
But with due respect, sir, your caucus is not going to change what you've agreed upon. No. You're not going to get any mandate, fresh mandate. We have agreed here. We're not opening anything fresh for discussion. You see, we are going back to where we started. And I don't like it. I'm just saying to you, sir, I'm trying to understand what is the purpose of going to caucus, because what we have dealt with now, we are coming back tomorrow just to see whether what is recorded is what we have agreed upon. In other words, you're not going to get a new mandate from the caucus. That's what I'm trying to say.
Chairperson, there have been a number of amendments proposed. There have been whole sections that have been changed, substituted, taken out, put in, whole sections that have changed. My point is, that we have a right to caucus on this in terms of the rules of Parliament, and we're asking for that. Now, the time set aside for caucus is 9 o'clock tomorrow, and I don't understand what the urgency is that this can't be held over to next week. Again, it appears, Chairperson, that this is being bulldozed, and I'd like my objection to that proposal recorded.
You see, we can have the objections recorded, but at the committee, we have a responsibility to make sure that we deal with this legislation as fast as we can, and we can. We deal with this legislation. I've been requested to hold my temper, and I'm going to do exactly that. We deal with this legislation, take it back to Parliament, and Parliament will have to decide what they want to do with it. And I'm therefore saying we have done so much. I don't think we really have to defer this thing for next week. No. We can meet tomorrow. It will take us an hour because we're not going to be open a discussion. We're just going to make sure that what is recorded in the A-list is what we've agreed upon.
Thank you very much. Chief Chairperson, don't we have the right maybe to consult our principals in terms of this? Because I think that why rushing? Because even next week it can also happen. Is there any time limit that the time frame that if we don't finish it tomorrow, then there will be a penalty? So I just want to find out. Because we need to do this bill in consultation with other people, so that we can we don't have to disagree when we debate there, because some certain issues are not actually satisfying other members. So I think I also believe that even in your party, you still have to consult your principals. But I think that is logic. I mean, we can. If we are not forced to submit you to Parliament tomorrow, why do we confine ourselves to finishing?
Okay, point taken. Let me hear you, Mabila.
When are they seeking the mandate from their principals? Because I thought that the inputs or the comments that they were making was the comment of their caucus. If maybe the issue of time, you can consult your principals this afternoon, look at the inputs that have been given you to forward to this committee, then tomorrow morning we finalize this thing, Chair. Fortunately, the ANC has confidence in us, what we've done, of course, that's according to the policies of our party. But those who have got doubts, then tell them how to consult their principals for more inputs, because I thought that they were supposed to consult their principals before. And I thought that the comments that were made here were the comments from their caucus.
Can I get a comment from UDM?
Well, the person, as we have said, whatever our caucus is about to say, I don't want to change anything yet. Because we have agreed as a committee in this thing. Really, I don't see any reason for them to consult our, because we did that before we came here.
Cope.
Chairperson, I don't have a problem. Not at all. Thank you.
IFP? You have no problem. So is DA having a problem? Okay, we will meet tomorrow at 8:30. We'll be notified of the venue through SMS so that we can look at the changes that we have made. We are going to have a caucus, our caucus at 10, but we don't have to go there and ask for any mandate because they've given a mandate long ago. So and I'm sure other parties also agree that that is how we should. And I'm really appealing to the DA to reconsider their stance, because I believe that this thing is very important. The meeting is not over yet. We are going to the next item now. We will deal with the report of the public hearings. I'm sure you have read them. What's that one, sir? I explained in the beginning when the meeting started, we're following the agenda of yesterday. That's what I said when I started this meeting. So we are dealing with a report I don't have my copy of the report with me. Because I was working with the agenda that I received to dealing with the property valuation. I have read the report. My point is that I don't have it with me.
Can I give you a copy?
That would be nice. Yeah? Would be nice.
Yeah. No, I've got only one. You can share that one. We have another one.
Okay. Just before, you were leaving. Okay, no, that's fine. I must say that maybe before we actually consider this report, just to say there was a proposal for inclusion on this report by yourself in terms of this deceased estate, which I want the committee also to consider as we're moving on. But the department is excused. Oh, sorry, it was on the restitution bill. Yeah, you're right. Thank you very much. Can we deal with it first and indicate whether we support or not? It says a person shall be entitled to restitution of a right in land if it is a deceased estate dispossessed of the right in land after 19 June 1913 as a result of past racial discriminatory laws or practice, and the claim for restitution is lodged not later than 31st December 1998. Are we agreeing to that? We'll include it in the report. Okay, thank you. Okay, can I hear you on the public hearing report? The draft report. Are there any issues that you think maybe they are excluded or maybe they are not captured in the manner in which they should have been captured? Honorable Swati.
Yeah, page 5 on the province and dates of dispute of public hearings. On Limpopo, it is recorded here that we visited Waterbeck District and the participation was 700 in Mole. The municipality we went in Waterbeck is not Mole, but it was Mudimule. Mudimule, not Mole. Mudimule. Yeah, Mudimule. Yes, Mudimule. Yeah. And the second one is Free State. Yeah, same page. The second one is Free State. In Free State, we did not visit Kuruma. We visited Elukwatwa. It was Elukwatwa there at that municipality is called Maguja Kofu in Free State.
Yeah,
where we had that meeting at headquarters,
we went to
Kwa
Kwa and
yeah, but here it's reaching Kuruma.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. I just want to be I want us to be agree. What is the name of that municipality in Kwa or the district? What's the name?
Yeah, but the local, but I'm just objecting to the Kuruma, because it was not Kuruma.
Yeah, Kuruma is in the Northern Cape.
Yes, yes, yeah, but it's still under Free State.
Yes, no, I agree with you, Baba. And then the one in Bloemfontein, what is it? That, Utabela.
Arena. Yeah, falls under Mangaung. Yeah, under Mangaung.
So it's Mangaung.
Yes.
Do we name them by district or by local municipality?
Yeah, they use the district. Yeah, they use the district because it's between Tabo Mfutsanyane and Waterberg. But in those in other areas where they have used the district, they also use the specific place where that also place.
So under Northern Cape, they must put in Kuruma together with Khasekhonyana, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is this Yanda? Or is it?
It's not.
Can I suggest that because you see, I don't know, but I think Khasekhonyana is supposed to be in Kuruma.
Correct.
Right.
Mm.
So. I don't know which is the correct name to use.
John Taole,
that's right. So that's why I'm thinking that maybe we should get, people who come from there to help.
Yeah,
give us the correct name. I think it will help us a great deal, otherwise. But the issue of Budimolle is taken note of. Any other change? Ikangala, is that correct?
Inkangala.
Yeah. And then, okay. I think the format must be like this. Either we put the district and then the municipality must be a format. Because if you look at under Northwest, the second one says the Dr. Mpati district, Mamosa local municipality, which is, I think is correct. If we can have a format sort of across so that we know it was in a certain district. In a particular municipality. Yes. Yes. But then we have to assist, especially those who come from those areas, to maybe just to write in a piece of paper in terms of Mpumalanga, to write it properly, you send it to Menyamza, and then all of us, we do like that, especially where we think that there's not been properly. Agreed. Any other correction or comment? Just
Chairperson, this is just an probably interesting observation. I was wondering whether we were making use of estimation of the number of people that were there, because almost all except for one gathering, it ended at a zero, a full figure of the amount of people that was present. if it wasn't for that seven, then everywhere it would be either 100, 150 or so much people that were there.
I agree, it's a very interesting coincidence. You also have round figures, you know, and even numbers also. But I think maybe what we can do, well, surely they were using registers, but I think it's to go back to the register and make sure that we try. And I don't think the registers will be 100% accurate, because some people did not fill the registers and so on. So it's really an estimation, say plus minus the number. But I said, let's go back to register and see how many we have on the register. But I know that in many of these public hearings, we had many people who attended. I can remember, recall only maybe one municipality, like in, I think it's Lady Smith, where we didn't really have the attendance. Yeah. That's my last
Chair, I find it interesting that you say Ladysmith was poorly attended when it has the same number of people attending as Alfred and Zo, Zululand, etc., etc. You know. Anyway, Chair, what I actually wanted to raise as an issue was on the recommendations, which are probably the most important part of the report. There were two recommendations that I had queries about. The first is 6.2.2, and I'd like to propose that we put in there, or include in there, something along the lines of that the amendment of the CPA Act be addressed as a matter of urgency. Because that's been outstanding for quite some time. And the second is 6.2.3. We had a discussion a couple of weeks ago about exceptions to legislation. And I'm not sure that this accurately captures where we ended up on that. I believe, and I might be wrong here, but I believe that we agreed that we'd have to introduce new legislation to deal with pre-1913 land claims. I think that's what we agreed. I can't recall exactly where we ended up, but I think that's what we agreed.
I think on this one of the exceptions, it's a process that the department is actually dealing with. I think all what we expressed, if I remember well, was that we need the department to come and give us an update in terms of where they are in terms of the development of this exception policy, because having discussions with the minister, it seems to me they have done some work, but all we need to do is just to get a proper report that can give us a full update of what they... We heard him yesterday talking about, I don't know what he called it, but the issue of monuments and so on, which relate to this program of the COI and the SAN. So maybe what we need to do, even at the remaining years of our lives, in this committee, we can find a way of getting the department to come and give us a brief in terms of so we can close our books in a knowledge of where we are. It's kind to me. Any other thing on the recommendations? So we take it that with the amendment made, this report is a reflection of actually what took place during our public hearing. Agreed? Thank you very much. So, thank you very much. And meeting is agenda till tomorrow 8:30. Thank you. Thank you.
withdraw.
It's a lot.
I was unable to understand.
Yeah.